So I want you to imagine stepping up to this heavy soundproof door. And on your side of the door, you're in this high stakes, incredibly fast paced military environment.
Right. You've got ranks, uniforms, salutes happening.
Exactly. A very rigid, very clear chain of command. The rules of engagement are basically visible everywhere you look.
Yeah. It's a world where, you know, hierarchy isn't just some tradition. It's literally a matter of operational survival.
Right. Everyone knows their exact place in the structure.
Yeah.
Who they report to, who reports to them.
But then you turn the handle, right? You open that door, you step inside, and the door clicks shut behind you.
And suddenly all those rules just vanish.
They completely disappear. The uniform doesn't matter. I mean, the person sitting across from you might outrank you by like 3 levels.
Yeah, they might be flying transport planes while you're managing logistics on a naval base.
Exactly. But in this room, none of that applies. You are on completely neutral ground.
Which is just wild to think about. It's this intentional vacuum.
Right.
Designed to create something that is just incredibly rare in a structured organization.
Yeah. Pure, unadulterated psychological safety.
Welcome to episode 5 of this deep dive into the RNZAF mentoring program.
Glad to be here for this one.
So just to remind you, if you were with us for the last part of this deep dive, we looked at the architecture, we explored how you actually design a mentoring program for scale without losing its humanity.
We looked at the scaffolding, essentially.
Right, the scaffolding. But scaffolding isn't the building.
No, it's just there to hold up what's happening inside.
Exactly. So today, our mission is to peel back those structural layers and answer the big question, what actually happens behind closed doors?
We're going to walk you through the entire life cycle of a mentoring relationship.
Yeah, from that very first, probably pretty awkward handshake, all the way to potentially a life-changing career pivot.
Because the core theme here is that mentoring is fundamentally simple, but it's certainly not easy.
Not at all. It relies entirely on presence, trust, and really the art of intentional conversation.
And setting the conditions for that conversation, it actually begins way before anyone even sits down.
Right. We have to talk about the matchmaker's art. Because you can't just, you know, draw names out of a hat and expect profound personal growth.
Definitely not. So looking at the program materials, this matching process is handled by a group called the Mentoring Advisory Team, or the MMAT.
The MMAT. And they use this thing called the Mentoring Matching Form, the MMF, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's designed to gather data on what you as the mentee actually need, your learning style, your goals.
But the thing that really stood out to me in these sources is that the MMAT actively prioritizes perspective over similarity.
Yes, that is such a crucial point.
They intentionally pair people across different trades, different ranks, and even cross-service, like an Air Force pilot with a Navy sailor.
Which goes completely against our standard corporate intuition, right?
Right.
Usually we think of a mentor as like a clone of our future selves.
Right. Someone who's exactly 5 years ahead of me on my exact career path.
But the RNZAF, and this actually aligns with global standards from places like the EMCC, they realized that similarity kind of limits growth.
How so?
Well, if you want to generate fresh thinking, you have to introduce a totally different perspective into the room.
See, I don't entirely buy that. I mean, playing devil's advocate here.
Sure, go for it.
If I'm aviation engineer, right, and I'm trying to pass this massive technical hurdle on a helicopter rotor, a Navy sailor sitting across the table just cannot help me. They don't know the machinery.
Ah, okay. So if you need help fixing the actual helicopter rotor, you need coaching, not mentoring.
Oh, wait. Coaching versus mentoring.
Exactly. It's a huge distinction in the handbook. Coaching happens inside your trade. It's directive. Your supervisor coaches you on how to turn the wrench.
Okay, so what is mentoring then?
Mentoring is about the human being holding the wrench.
Oh, wow. Okay, I like that. So it's kind of like if I'm trying to navigate my way out of a really dense forest, I don't need someone standing right next to me looking at the exact same trees.
Right, because they're just as lost as you are.
Yeah, I need someone sitting up in a watchtower who can see the whole landscape.
Yeah.
They might not know how to swing my specific machete, but they can see I'm, like, exhausting myself heading toward a cliff.
That is a perfect analogy. And taking that watchtower idea even further, the main reason for this cross-pollination is psychological safety.
Because of the chain of command.
Exactly. If your mentor is in your direct chain of command, you are always going to have your guard up. Always.
Because you're terrified to admit you're burning out or doubting yourself. Because that confession might end up on your next performance review.
Right, but by pairing you with someone completely outside your sphere of influence, you're free to just be totally honest.
Which brings us to the room itself.
Yeah.
The match is made, you've got your pairing, and you're walking into that first meeting.
The first conversation.
Yeah. And breaking the ice when one person might massively outrank the other, that just seems nearly impossible to me. Human nature doesn't just switch off because a door closed.
No, of course not. If you're a junior enlistee sitting across from a base commander, your instinct is to, you know, sit up perfectly straight and wait for orders.
Exactly. So how do they get past that?
That's why the physical environment is so heavily controlled. The guidelines are super explicit. These meetings have to be held in private, neutral venues.
So no meeting in the senior officer's office behind their giant mahogany desk.
Right. Definitely not. You meet in a quiet cafe or a neutral briefing room or even completely off base.
The sources actually mention this fascinating historical thing from the original 2008 pilot program. They had participants do their training in civilian attire.
Yeah, literally stripping away the uniform to strip away the hierarchy.
It's such a profound symbolic gesture.
It really is. And today, the very first thing that happens in that room is the immediate verbal establishment of boundaries.
The mentor actually has to say it out loud, right?
Yes. They explicitly state, I am not your supervisor. This is completely separate from your performance management. Everything we discuss is strictly confidential.
Unless there's like an ethical or legal breach, obviously.
Oh, obviously. But otherwise, totally locked down.
It sounds like stepping into a diplomatic embassy.
Yeah.
Just totally neutral territory where normal laws of gravity don't apply.
That's exactly what it is.
But man, I imagine it must be agonizing for a senior military leader to just sit there and listen.
Oh, it is. It really is.
Because they spend their whole career giving orders, fixing problems instantly. Turning off that boss brain has to be the hardest part.
It's a massive mindset shift. During their training, mentors really have to transition from a mindset of giving advice to a mindset of walking alongside.
Walking alongside.
Yeah. You aren't there to fix the person. You're there to help them find their own solutions.
Okay, so once that initial safety is established, the ice is broken, the relationship has to actually evolve. You can't just stay in that icebreaker phase.
Right. These formal pairings usually last for about 12 months.
And keeping a conversation productive for a year without it just degrading into like a casual catch-up over coffee, that requires a serious roadmap.
Which is where the five phases come in. This is adapted from David Clutterbuck's work, a global mentoring expert.
Let's walk through them. Phase one is building rapport.
Yeah, and the handbook explicitly warns mentors not to rush this phase.
Right, because you're trying to understand completely different backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
If you skip the small talk and jump straight into deep psychological stuff,
the foundation just pummels. You have to establish that baseline of trust first.
Makes sense. So phase two is direction setting. This is where they jointly figure out expectations, like what are we trying to achieve? How often are we meeting?
And from the notes, it looks like the ideal rhythm is meeting every 3 to 4 weeks.
Which leads us into the core of the whole thing. Phase three, progress making. This is the heavy lifting.
The longest part of the life cycle. This is where the deep conversations happen, where assumptions really get challenged.
The aha moments.
Exactly. But then we get to phase four, which is winding up. A deliberate phase to acknowledge the formal structure is ending.
Okay, I have to push back on this one. I found this part of the handbook a bit surprising.
How so?
Why force a breakup? If the relationship is going great and you're both getting a lot out of it, why not just keep it going indefinitely? Forcing a winding up phase feels really bureaucratic.
Well, think about the psychology of closure. Without a deliberate period of reflection, the learnings just sort of evaporate into the daily grind.
Hmm. Okay, I see that.
Plus, if the meetings just slowly stop happening, the mentee might feel abandoned.
It's like a graduation ceremony. You don't just, you know, stop going to classes one Tuesday and wander off into the world.
Right, you need a moment to celebrate.
You need to acknowledge the growth, consolidate the lessons, and officially mark the transition before the next chapter.
Which leads directly into phase five. Moving on. This is transitioning to a friendship of equals or just independent networking.
Because the goal isn't to create a dependency.
Never. A successful mentor basically makes themselves obsolete. Mentorship is designed to make the mentee self-sufficient.
And eventually, capable of becoming a mentor for someone else.
Exactly. Passing the torch.
Let's zoom back into that middle section, though, the heavy lifting phase. Because when you're sitting in the chair staring across the table, the mentor isn't just winging the conversation.
No, they have very specific conversational tools. frameworks designed to trigger those moments of insight.
One of them mentioned in the sources is the WOTA-GO model. This comes from the New Zealand Coaching and Mentoring Center.
Yeah, the WOTA-GO framework is essentially about forcing a deliberate pause.
Because in the military, the default reflex is action, right? If there's a problem, you execute a solution immediately.
Right. So the WOTA forces the mentee to literally stop, reflect on the situation, assess their underlying needs before they ever move to the go phase.
Which is taking purposeful action.
Exactly. Don't just act to act.
There's also the GROW model, which I know is a huge staple in the corporate coaching world too.
Yes, GROW stands for goal, reality, options, and will.
So first, you identify the exact goal you want to achieve.
Right. Then you look at the reality of the current situation. No sugarcoating, just facts.
Yeah. Then you brainstorm options. Yeah. Like, what are all the possible paths forward here?
And finally, the will. What are you actually going to commit to doing right now?
But navigating those big frameworks requires some precise tactical tools, like scaling questions.
Oh, scaling questions are fantastic. Asking a mentee to rate their confidence or stress on a scale of 1 to 10.
It sounds almost too simple, though.
It does, but think about it. It takes these abstract, messy human emotions and forces them into a concrete, trackable metric.
So if a mentee says, I'm totally overwhelmed by my new command, mm-hmm. that's just this massive, nebulous cloud.
Right. And a mentor cannot work with a cloud. But if they ask on a scale of 1 to 10, how overwhelmed are you? And the mentee says, I'm at an 8.
Then what?
The mentor asks, what specific thing would need to happen to bring you down to a 7?
Oh, wow. That makes the growth incremental. It's so much more manageable than trying to go from an 8 to a 0.
Exactly. But the tool that the research emphasizes more than anything else is the rule of powerful questions.
Right. This is the linguistic shift. Mentors are explicitly trained to ask what instead of why.
Yes. That subtle shift completely alters the psychological safety of the room. It's actually deeply rooted in neuroscience.
That's so.
Research shows that when you ask someone a why question, like why did you make that decision?
The brain processes it as a threat.
Exactly, because it feels like an interrogation.
Yeah, if someone asks me, why did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
My immediate instinct is to build a defense attorney's case for my actions. The walls go straight up.
The amygdala flares, and your mind just shuts down to protect itself. You start justifying past behavior instead of exploring new ideas.
But if the mentor changes the phrasing to a what question.
Like, what was the main factor that led to that decision? Or what is the core challenge you're facing right now?
The threat response disappears. Because what invites curiosity? It's asking for an objective observation rather than a personal justification.
Exactly. It completely expands the mind.
I gotta say, though, looking at all these tools, the GROW model, scaling questions, what versus why, it sounds very clinical. It almost borders on feeling like a therapy session.
It's easy to blur the lines, sure, but the distinction is actually very clear.
What's the difference?
Therapy typically looks backward, right? To heal past trauma or address clinical dysfunction. Mentoring looks forward to unlock future potential.
Okay, yeah. I think of it more like diagnostic testing for a complex car engine.
Okay, I like where this is going.
The mentor isn't ripping out the engine and replacing the parts for you. They're just plugging in the diagnostic computer.
Right.
The scaling questions, the what frameworks, those are just the interface cables. You plug them in so the engine can tell you where the misfire is happening.
Because the mentee's brain is the engine. It already knows what's wrong and how to fix it. It just needs the right interface to express it.
Exactly. And during the training workshops, the RNZAF hammers home this specific quote from David Rock, the leadership expert.
Oh, the golden rule.
Yeah. Let the mentee do all the thinking.
Let the mentee do all the thinking. It completely flips the traditional power dynamic of, like, a teacher and a student.
But achieving that requires an insane level of active listening. Mentors are taught to listen to understand, not just to respond.
Which is so rare. In everyday conversation, most of us are just, you know, waiting for the other person to take a breath so we can say our piece.
Truly guilty of that.
We all are. But a mentor sits in silence. They listen deeply, paying attention to the hesitations, the body language, what's being left unsaid.
Okay, but if the mentee is doing all the thinking and the mentor refuses to just hand over the answers, how do we define success here?
That's the ultimate paradigm shift of this whole program.
Because in a military setting, you'd assume success means producing a soldier who flawlessly follows orders, hits objectives, and gets promoted fast.
But success in this program is explicitly not measured by a promotion or a glowing performance report.
Which is crazy to think about. There's this fantastic story in the notes that perfectly illustrates this. It's about a junior corporal working in logistics.
Yes, the logistics corporal. Such a great example.
They were just completely overwhelmed, totally frustrated with their chain of command, basically on the verge of resigning.
Ready to walk away from their career.
Right. So they sit down in one of these closed-door mentoring sessions with a wing commander, someone vastly senior to them.
And the corporal just unloads all their frustrations.
Yeah, and the natural response for the wing commander would be to give a speech about resilience or offer tactical advice on dealing with difficult officers.
Because they've been there, right. They want to fix it. But the mentor didn't do that.
No. The mentor just listened, let the silence hang in the air, and then asked one single question. What is the underlying pattern in all the conflicts you just described?
No advice. Just force the corporal to look at their own engine.
Exactly. And the corporal realized their frustration wasn't really with the military at all. It was actually an issue with their own communication style.
A single conversation shifted their entire career trajectory, and the mentor barely even spoke.
That is incredible.
That is how success is measured in mentoring. It's clarity of thought, confidence in decision-making, finding direction, and ultimately personal self-awareness.
And it isn't just the junior personnel getting all the benefits. The program heavily relies on reverse mentoring.
Oh, absolutely. That wing commander sitting with the junior corporal, they often walk away realizing they are learning just as much from the younger generation's perspective.
Breaking down those generational silos.
It's a two-way street.
It's just so counterintuitive. Especially in an action-oriented environment where applying force and momentum is the standard way to fix things.
You're trying to muscle through the obstacle.
Right. It really reminds me of, like, a martial arts master.
Okay, how so?
A master doesn't defeat an opponent by swinging wildly and using maximum force, right? They step aside and use the opponent's own momentum to resolve the conflict.
Wow, yes.
The mentor achieves this massive, life-changing impact by literally doing less talking and applying less force.
The structure, the EMCC standards, the MAT meaning matching algorithms, the five phases, they all exist just to get two people into a room.
But once that door closes, the real power lies entirely in the quality of the conversation.
A well-timed open question, followed by intentional silence, does more heavy lifting than any organizational directive ever could.
It's a profound willingness to just sit back, be fully present, and let someone else figure out their own path.
Because creating the conditions for better thinking is infinitely more valuable than simply handing out the answers.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into the mentoring room, I want you to consider the environment we all operate in today.
It's constantly tracking us.
Right, we live in this hyper-connected digital panopticon. Every email is archived. Every digital meeting can be transcribed by AI. Every piece of advice is optimized and recorded.
Nothing is really off the record anymore.
Exactly. So in a world where your professional footprint is constantly tracked, think about this. Maybe the true value of this mentoring program isn't just the frameworks or the questions.
What is it then?
Perhaps the most profound thing about that heavy, soundproof door is that it might be one of the last true safe spaces left in the modern organization.
A place where two humans can talk, struggle, and grow entirely off the record.
So a final thought for you to explore on your own. Think about the next time a friend or colleague comes to you with a problem. What if, instead of immediately giving them your best advice, you just paused, sat back, and asked them one powerful, open-ended what question? Would they find a better solution if you let them do the thinking? Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.